I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hey, guys.
Hi, how are you?
Happy day.
Happy day. Happy Tuesday if you're listening on drop day.
Happy day that ends in Y if you're listening on any other day.
Yes, happy week after Spotify Wrapped.
I know, we were just in our feels.
I know.
We waited till we could go over our Spotify Wrapped together, and you guys, we're so grateful. And it was so very sweet this week. I know it's like old news by the time you guys hear this, because everyone forgets about Spotify Wrapped in like 3 days.
Yeah.
But we got so many messages from you guys about being in your top five, top three, number one. It was the coolest thing ever. We shared as many as we could. Some of you just reached out and just sent us the screenshot, which we loved and will cherish forever. It's really weird to be sitting at my dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
And usually in my comfy clothes.
We're always in comfies.
Sitting with my best friend, researching things that we're interested in, trying to learn as much as we can, and just telling the other about it. And for some reason, people are enjoying it with us and learning along with us. And it just feels so, we're just very so grateful. It's just so cool. It's like humbling and very, I'm like, oh no, what have I said?
Right. Well, it's humbling. And then we get these, I mean, very grateful. But we get such big numbers of people listening to things that we are, like, literally, we're here usually on a weeknight, comfied up after a long day of work, and we just sit here like, you will never fucking guess what I found out.
Mm-hmm.
And we love that you're all here with us. We obviously, like we said, we are educated in all of this, but it is just so nice. And we've gotten to see this table grow and grow and grow. And it has been beautiful. And you guys are the best. We were shocked and delighted to find out that we are like in the top 5% of a few different things.
Oh,
so we were shared more than 96% of other podcasts,
which is insanity.
Insane, you guys. We had our followers talk about us more than 99% of other podcasts. It's the top 1% there.
Of like comments that we've gotten.
Yes.
Which is absolutely madness. We had to pinch ourselves.
Truly.
We may have celebrated with Applebee's DoorDash. I don't know. I'm just...
Yeah.
I'm calling us out, but I have to. I just... I'm beside myself in the happiest way that we will never pretend that we know have all the answers or that our opinions won't change with more information, but it is kind of like a time capsule, like a snapshot of time. What we were thinking, what was going on in our lives.
Yeah.
Our opinions on things that I'm sure if I went back and listened to like our first 10 episodes, I might be like, oh, who is that? You know,
right.
Like we've grown so much over these last few years and we're just excited to continue growing. And one of the things that we kept getting messages about and emails about that really meant a lot to me, and I know that it did to Abby too, was that so many of you appreciate that what we do here is not super scripted.
Yeah.
I mean, we have our notes and we have our, you know, our bullet points and the things that we want to talk about cases, obviously, because we don't want to give anybody false information, but we're very just kind of on the fly.
Yeah.
I like to think we're pretty quick with it some days.
Yeah.
But we try to have a relaxed approach because we're not trying to be super formal.
Yeah.
And if you want this super dramatic retelling, then like there's Dateline.
Yes.
And there's Chris Hansen, you know? And if you want it like a storybook, you can listen to a book on tape.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people prefer different things and I love that. I'll listen to a variety of things, but I really like casual conversation. I want to feel like I am the third or fourth person in the room.
Right.
And it made me happy to know that so many of you actually listen to us because you feel that way, that we've been able to create that with your help is just the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, you guys are going to make me cry.
I know. Don't make Abby sob. Her finger's still broken. It's still
broken.
We're still on the struggle bus, front seat.
Driving even, maybe.
Yeah. Without a permit. Just
nope.
We're just rolling with it. We're hoping we don't get pulled over. So all of that to say, we appreciate that you value the things that we've worked really hard to establish, that things that we really liked and that we didn't hear a lot of and that we wanted, and that you guys love the bestie vibes. You're like, I feel like I'm with my besties. I'm like, well, because you are.
Yeah.
You know, and And I don't know, my heart is very warm and we're just so grateful. And this time of year, it just couldn't come at a better time to just this time of year. I'm very family focused. I mean, I think I'm family focused always, but my friends are my family.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys are all an extension of that. And so it just seems like we're all just eating some yummy food and hanging out and talking about things that we hope that we can learn from and prevent from happening in the future again. And
yeah,
growing and learning. And I brought the dip to this gathering. So if you guys are wondering, please let us know. Please let us know in the comments what you brought, because I've been making a really good garlic bread dip.
Yes, you have been making a really good
garlic dip. So that's what I brought. So I hope you guys like cheese and not shitting for a week.
Yum.
You're welcome.
Or the opposite. If you love cheese and you love shitting for a week. I mean, it really goes either way for people.
What I like to say is I've got range.
Yes.
You know, and you've always loved that about me. So that's what I did.
Let's see. What did I bring? So one of the ongoing jokes that I've had recently was I brought a salad to Thanksgiving and people were like, oh, so you think you're better than us? And I was like, no, it's just a salad with like seasonal stuff in it, like a butternut squash.
Oh, so you think you're better than me?
Yeah. So I guess you guys eat the salad. We're going to be better than everyone else.
What are you, like a vegan or something? Okay. You're just never going to stop talking about it. You're just never going to stop talking about it.
Okay. No, I'm never going to. Actually, how do you know if you're around a vegan or a vegetarian?
They don't stop talking about it.
Well, I was going to say, you'll know because they'll find you. But yeah, basically. Oh. And I can say this as a former vegetarian for many a year. I wish I could still be. I loved it.
You know.
And I would still talk to people about it.
If I could meet my protein requirement,
mm-hmm.
I would give it a shot.
I honestly thought it was easier then.
But I think I would wither away. Like, yeah. Oreos are vegan. Like, I could eat the shit out of that if you want. Like, if you're going to, like, try me, I will. Yeah. But, like, preferably, I'm going to try to eat a little bit healthy. So.
I am going to start to sound ridiculous.
Abigail.
All right.
We just.
We'll move on.
People have been listening.
I know.
We're going to steer them right away. We'll I know. Turn this you guys, off.
Just skip past me, please. I'm actually going to skip past myself here. So, what did you bring to the table? And how was it? And did everybody hate what you brought the same way they hated what I brought?
I don't think anybody would hate if you brought a salad, honestly. I think it's a side. It's what you do.
And it was yummy, if anybody even cares.
I care. I think it's very lovely. Because you bring a side, you bring a dessert, you bring a little something.
Yeah.
And that's what you did. And it was delish, I bet.
Good if you care. It had like roasted butternut squash and dried cranberries and feta and a homemade dressing.
Okay.
So it was good. Don't sleep on it. But I am just so happy for you all. I'm so happy that you're all here. I love every day when we record. I literally am in Allie's kitchen and there are 4 empty seats next to us. And it feels like every time we get to see more numbers, the table just expands and expands and expands. And it is delightful. And so like overwhelming in such a good way.
That being said, this episode, I heard from a little birdie, is going to fucking hurt.
Yeah.
So we've got that.
Get your tissues. Before we hop all the way in, if you guys had any really funny Spotify Wrapped moments for yourself, let us know. Personally, mine were right on par.
How old were you?
Every year. 25.
Okay.
I wasn't mad at it, but one of our very good friends of the pod, Emily, her listening age was like 68 or something.
It was, yeah. I remember, that was
first of all,
it's
so
a lot
rude.
It's a lot of Fleetwood Mac. Okay,
yeah.
First of all,
also, can you blame a girl for liking Billy Joel? No,
I can't trust my Spotify Wrapped because my husband pretty much like takes it over.
Yeah,
because he's more of a music person. Like, he'll listen to music when he's driving. I'll listen to music sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I love me a podcast. I am what I am, and yeah. I can't help it, and I'm not working on changing. But because of that, like, when he works out, it's always workout music. So my Spotify Wrapped was just hijacked by all of his garbage music, and then like the third most listened to was Hozier, which was me.
Yep.
And I'm like, there I am.
There it
in
is.
This. So I can't trust any of my numbers, but our listening age was like 35, 33.
Okay.
I'm like, all right, that's not bad.
No, mine was younger than I thought it was going to be, but I think it's because I had kind of a Ariana Grande resurgence in the listening streak, but she's also always been in there somewhere. So
she is always crazy. In your playlist.
Yeah, it's...
And Taylor Swift had an album this year, right? So of course you were listening to that.
Yeah, I didn't actually listen to that one a lot.
You didn't?
Don't hate me, guys.
I could give a fuck. I've never been like a big... I don't have anything against her. It's just her music never... I was never drawn to it. Like when I was younger, when everyone was like getting on the bus. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just never did. And then I was like, well, it's a little... Like there's so much to catch up. I just don't even want to. So,
yeah.
I'm like, there's so much lore. I don't want to learn it.
I have really enjoyed sort of growing up alongside. That has been fun to see someone who has appeared to be like very personable and sort of paralleled to any of her listeners. I think that was a very intentional but very effective marketing technique.
Oh, yeah.
And I think she is a phenomenal lyricist.
Mm-hmm.
But the most recent one just wasn't for me. And I'm okay with that. That's fine.
Well, she's done like one of every genre at this point. Like, she's going to rap soon, I'm sure.
That'd be funny.
Could you imagine?
No.
Could you imagine? I actually don't want to hear that. Personally, no offense, no hate, no tea, no shade, but yikes.
Yikes. Yeah. So, not a fan. Just resurging my little Ari streak, which I have to be honest, guys... Do you ever have a musician that you really like that's sort of around your age, but you've been following for long enough that anytime you talk about it, it just sounds really creepy and parasocial? Because I swear to God, I do not pretend to know this woman.
And like, yet?
And yet, I have been around for enough of the career highlights since like the first album got a free digital download off of SNL that I feel bad because people be like, did that happen? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I'm trying to be like, no, I'm not that fucking person.
Like, you're like, it actually did, but it was in the fall of 2014. Okay,
yeah, okay.
Grow up.
Get it right, first of all. Second of all, you don't even know what you're fucking talking. No, I'm kidding.
Yep. Abby was throwing hands. You should see her. She's throwing elbows at people.
I am. It's actually how I broke my finger.
It's true.
No, it's not.
But she was lying about the dog.
Yeah. I got it in fights. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really good at them, if you care. And by that, I mean I cry at most of them, but I do it really good, so.
Yeah, for sure. I've heard that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear anything crazy for you. I have been seeing like the little snippets of things that people post. And one person was like, oh, my gosh, I listened to one specific song in Hamilton a little too much. And now my like number one played song is that one song from Hamilton. And the rest of it is like your normal listening music. So I've just been enjoying that. So let us know if Spotify did anything fucking weird to you this time around. And was your age offensive? Was it offensive to you? Because it was to some people.
It
60,
is, yeah.
It's a little old.
Ours aged us, which I wasn't thrilled about. But I guess it's better than like 80.
Or 12.
Ugh.
No offense.
You
that's
know,
for you. 12-year-olds, that's for you. You get that.
12-year-olds like, should not be listening to this right now, first of all. Second of all, it just means you have kids if you're 8.
Yeah, probably. Literally. But okay. I do feel like we've talked about everything extra fun.
Because now it's going to hurt really bad.
Because now it's going to hurt. And I'm excited to get into it. But I also, you guys, go get tissues. Just go.
Yeah, all I know about this episode is that I was told to bring tissues. So I didn't. I have my sleeves. But
yeah, I have sleeves and a cup of water to cry into. So
yeah.
So
without further ado,
pods on. Hi, hello, and welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
That's us.
Today, we are heading into our third out of what will certainly be a four-part series.
Yes.
On the Watts Family Massacre. If you haven't listened to parts one and two, go ahead and do that now. We'll wait. Okay, good job. You did it. So you're all caught up.
Great work.
Now, we're here and all on the same page. But as per usual, we always cite our sources and our trigger warnings at the top. So just like any other week, I have loads of sources linked below for you in a Google Doc. And also, I saw one of you in there the other night when I updated for part three. You slinky little minx. I hope you had a great time and you're enjoying them as much as I did. And just know they'll keep getting updated as I keep finding more things to add to them, which it has been truly an ongoing list.
Yes, absolutely.
So for some shout outs in our sources today, I just wanted to highlight once again, so much good information I got from The Perfect Father by John Glatt. That was a book on this case. And I also used quite a bit of information from Business Insider, the documentary on Netflix, American Murder, The Family Next Door, and again, pulled quite a bit of good information from Murder with My Husband and Love, Mary Kills series on this. For trigger warnings, we're going to jump off pretty quick here. Not immediately, but like whatever's immediately after immediately, with some pretty brutal, heartless, depraved murders. And we'll talk about some generally barbaric human behavior. Nothing too psychological today. There is mention of suicide later on, but it is sort of a passing reason for something else. So it's not a ton of emphasis on that. But please, please proceed with caution today. It's not too gory, but it is just really depraved and heart-wrenching. So take care of yourself. The ATFTC fam wouldn't be the same without you. And we want you here.
Yes, we do.
So just as a quick recap from last week, where we left off was with Chris finally admitting to one version of his story and subsequently getting arrested on August 15th, 2018. The story that he admitted to was spoon-fed to him by the detectives involved. And it basically was that Shanann hurt the kids. And he had to be so brave and hurt her because he snapped because those were his babies.
Yep, he had to be so big and brave and strong.
Mm-hmm. All the while having a full-on affair with his mistress, Nicole Kessinger, who we've been referring to as Nikki. But again, this night that he confessed to this made-up version, it was right after he failed his polygraph test.
Yeah. Like,
hard.
Hard.
Like, hard, hard. I don't think I mentioned this last week, but if you were, you know, just curious at all about how poorly he failed this polygraph.
Very.
Very. But a typical failing score is at -4. You score -4, that is like the beginning cutoff for a failing test.
Loser.
He scored -18.
Yeah, that's not great.
So that's 4.5 times the already considered failing score, if we were curious.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. And I don't know how I feel about lie detector tests anyway, because I'm always like, idiot, don't take one.
Yeah.
And then I'm always like, idiot, take it. But it's usually just don't take it.
I think I'm fine with them as a sort of tactic to use in getting a confession. I mean, obviously they're not admissible as evidence.
Oh, 100%. I get why law enforcement does it, but as the person being interviewed, I would don't do that.
The other thing here is that Chris does not lawyer up until after this.
That is
which more wild. Than the polygraph test is the biggest mistake I think he's made, because no matter who you are, if you're guilty or if you're innocent, and specifically in the words of Murder with My Husband, specifically if you're innocent, the worst thing you can do is go into any police interrogations or interviews without a lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
And that is just for your safety. It's for your protection. I know people are like, oh, but that's going to make me look guilty. No. The thing about a lawyer is that they are trained for years in how to navigate a system that you, as likely a law-abiding citizen, if you are innocent, have never had to worry about. So get your guide, you know, don't get lost in that alone.
Yeah.
But with all of that to say, He fails this polygraph. He comes back into the room. They play hardball. They're disappointed in him. And the only thing he budges on is his mistress, that he's been having an affair with Nikki Kessinger.
So that's the thing he admits to.
Yes. He goes, okay, fine. And then they switch up their tactic because trying to make him poop his pants isn't working, you know? So they're like, okay.
Well, they didn't let me try, but okay.
That's true. You could probably make somebody poop their pants.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love
anytime.
That. Love you.
But so they essentially changed their tactic to like, we're going to try to get you to admit to one thing at a time because you just admitted to one thing that we know you're lying about.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of appealed to his ego. They make him the hero. And that's why they're painting Shanann as this bad guy, which, as we ended last time, is what Chris white knuckled onto and decided to tell his dad was the truth.
It seemed like he heard a version he hadn't thought of yet where mm-hmm. he is less culpable.
Yes.
And adopts that narrative immediately and is like, yep, that actually, now that you mention it, that's exactly what happened.
And I think it's interesting because he doesn't say this to the detectives. He waits to get his dad in there.
It's like he floats it first to see how it lands.
Uh-huh.
His dad believes him. And then he thinks he's just kicking so much ass his feet stink. Like, he yep. thinks he is just, like, doing a great job. He really thinks he's selling it. And it's funny. It's funny how bad it is.
Horribly bad, I have to say. Like we said last week, the investigators on this, they could win a Grammy. Not a Grammy. They could win an Academy Award. A Tony, maybe? Whatever it is for fucking acting, they got it. In their pocket, you know?
It's an Oscar. You know why I was thinking that? Because Leonardo DiCaprio didn't get one for so long. They were like, give the man an Oscar. So I just had to tap back into that old stim.
I love that. Thank you so much. I think a Tony is for musicals. So if they actually put on a musical number, I think that'd be even better.
Well, also vote for them. Thank you.
Yes.
Yep.
But Chris couldn't act for shit. He's not even in like the community theater production where there's like a no cut cast because they're begging for people and extras.
Right, where he's like passerby number four.
Correct. Yeah. No, he's not even there.
No.
Because he's not passing by at all.
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
He's telling you he is, but he's not. And so when investigators Coder and Lee fed Chris this story, he was like, yep, that's it. He tells his dad, and the investigators, of course, are watching, and they end up arresting Chris that night. So he's booked at like 11:30 p.m. So on August 21st, Chris was officially charged for the murder of his wife and kids. When Chris first enters his plea, you guessed it, brother was not guilty.
You know, I never thought he was.
And you always say that. But
for the record, no, I don't say that.
I know.
Just because this case frustrates me so much, I can't even try to bring any levity to what's going to make us all cry. I just, this man is just, these acts are so evil. And
yes. And the hard part about our system is understandable, and also just because there's a vast amount of cases going through. When we have these cases, they don't automatically book the trial that day.
No. Well, no. They need time to further their investigation. They got enough to charge him. Does not mean it's enough for a conviction. Keep working.
Right. So they're in that process. They're waiting for a trial date. It was going to be scheduled again for the murder of Shanann Watts, Bella Watts, Cece Watts, and baby Nico Watts.
Wow.
Though, for whatever reason, Chris changes his silly little mind a few months later. And on November 6th, 2018, Chris takes a plea deal where he admits to killing his entire family to avoid the death penalty, which he would have been eligible for in Colorado at this time.
Okay. So he made a deal that spares him the death penalty, but he's in there forever.
Right. And he has to say, I killed all of them, not just Shanann, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, his parents took this really poorly. They were like, I don't understand why he'd do that if he didn't kill them all. And I don't know if that sentiment has ever changed, but I know it was particularly confusing for them at that time.
I feel awful if they really did believe him.
I fear they likely did. And whether or not there's cognitive dissonance where they are sort of forcing themselves into that reality, or if they were just hoping so badly they chose to ignore any other possibility.
Sometimes the truth is really hard to accept.
Yeah. And that's your baby.
Yeah.
So I understand the struggle there, but it was definitely a struggle. And now here's the big gory trigger warning, because we're going to get to the sentencing, but because he's pleading, there's no trial. So it's very anticlimactic, really.
In terms of court.
Right.
Yeah.
So instead of filling you in like I might normally do in a court case with, and here's what they found, I kind of have to do that now. Mm-hmm. Because of how little there is later. And we will touch on all of it. But at this time, this is what they believed to be the closest thing to the truth.
Okay.
And again, this is horrendous. It's heartless. It's depraved. It's so personal that it is hard to sit with. And Chris, again, over time, he gives many statements about what happened that horrible morning of August 13th, 2018. And I will spare you all the hops and the skips and the jumps that he tries to pass off between each story that he gives. With that being said, I want to warn you that Chris has said himself that he is taking exactly what happened with him that day to the grave.
Right.
So I believe this is definitely the closest they knew at the time. We know more now that we'll get into next time. But during all of the court and legal proceedings, this is the crux of what they had. And I do still believe it to be like most of what we have today.
Mm-hmm. So this is like what they had in 2018, 2019, right, as they're continuing their investigation and piecing together what parts of his statements might be true and which ones can't be true.
Right. And I want to make sure that you all know, the day after he was arrested, he did help lead them to the bodies of his mm-hmm. family. And they were very nice to him even after he confessed to that initial fake story, because they were doing everything they could to get to those victims.
Yep, to put them to rest.
Right. And so after that, they then sort of turn around and they're like, this makes no sense. Also, if what you said isn't true and Shanann did not hurt those babies, you're comfortable with the whole world knowing that narrative?
I mean, he killed her. Of course he's comfortable with what people say.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So, yes, he said yes. Mm-hmm. Because he's doubling down, because apparently Chris that's Watts. His only move. But this is what they've gathered out of him in the next few months. Chris has said that morning, after him and Shanann had sex one last time the night before, he woke up and felt different. You know, he thought something had changed after that intimacy, and he knew he was done with that marriage and he wanted a divorce. He has said, especially around this time, that it felt like something else was controlling him. It wasn't like something else was controlling him and he knew it and wanted to change it. He says it's like something snapped and that was just what was going to happen and he had to do it.
Okay.
So early that morning, again, technically the same day that Shanann returned home from her work trip, because she returned home at 2 a.m. on August 13th, Chris decides to wake her up as he gets ready for work. I'm not sure of the specific time, but Chris leaves the house between like 5, 5.15, 5.30, mm-hmm. somewhere in there. So it's got to be earlier than that.
So he's waking her up after she's maybe gotten 2 hours of sleep.
At most, because yeah. she comes home at 2, they have sex, and then she gets whatever nap she gets.
Mm-hmm.
Before he wakes up and decides to take her with him too. So I would assume it's really early. Shanann got, again, at most a nap, but Chris thinks this is really the best moment to tell Shanann of his infidelity with Nikki. That he's cheated on her. Mm-hmm. That there's someone else. That's better. And because of that, he's done with this marriage. It's just not going to work. And he wants a divorce.
I can't stand him.
Shanann, again, we only know according to Chris, but initially took this very poorly, and she said that he was never going to be able to see the kids again. Which, if true, which is a big if, It is a bit of a reaction, but I do think a woman who's pregnant with your child going into her second trimester, who just got home at 2 a.m. that you then had sex with, let sleep for, let's call it an hour and a half, and then you woke up, said you've been cheating on her for weeks, which she already knew and asked you about that you denied, and then decided you were going to get a divorce, is allowed, entitled even almost, to have an initial reaction.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And after all, most people who have to go through a divorce like this get the chance to process and come back with a response.
Mm-hmm.
Shanann didn't get that option. Because when Chris hears this, he decides, better yet, he's not going to get a divorce. He's just going to be rid of her. She has to die. He gets on top of Shanann with his own hands, looking straight in her face, and strangles his pregnant wife. As we know from previous cases, manual strangling takes time, energy, and a lot of dedication. This is multiple minutes. This is not like a 30-second whoops.
What you see in a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's minutes of hard work. And Shanann didn't even fight back. She had no defensive wounds. And I can only imagine what must have gone through her mind as the man she loved and was just intimate with mere hours before this told her that not only was he sleeping with someone else, he wanted them more. And specifically, he didn't want her, their beautiful daughters, or the wonderful gift of a son that he's claimed historically he wanted so badly. And when that couldn't get any worse, he strangled her with his bare hands. And that's what she watched.
She died heartbroken, terrified,
mm-hmm.
and angry.
And exhausted, and anything you can think of. Devastated.
And of course was worried about the child in her womb and the two babies they had just down the hall.
Yeah.
Just, I can't even...
I think about this specific moment a lot because it's enough on its own to make you think about it a lot. But I think about it specifically because there's no defensive marks. She has no wounds to say that she fought back. And it's not like she was not awake. Well, we're fairly certain, at least from the autopsy and whatever Chris's version of this has truth in it, that she was awake. So what kind of heartache and devastation do you have to be in for this to happen for minutes from the man you both love and now hate to not even try to fight back? And she's a headstrong woman. This is not like her.
My only guess would be that he caught her by surprise. Maybe she wasn't awake. She was mm-hmm. sleeping. And he, like, knelt on her arms or something so that she wouldn't be able to. Yeah. Because, I mean, even in... And I don't mean to be graphic or anything, and I guess trigger warning for this, but even people who fully mentally intend to take their own lives, in the moment that their body is struggling to stay alive, instinctually you fight it.
Yes.
Even if mentally that is like what you had decided to do, the body reacts to try to preserve life. It's in your instinct. It's in your DNA. I can't imagine where she could overcome that and not fight it and just allow it to happen. I just feel like he subdued her.
There's got to be some way, because I just...
Or she just couldn't reach him. Like, she's trying to scratch at him and she can't reach him.
Right. It drives me insane. And I don't, like you said, there's no way that his story makes complete sense.
But he's claiming she didn't fight back at all.
Well, yeah. And we don't see anything on her body or his to indicate that she did.
Hmm.
So there's either an extra detail missing or there's extra detail than there was. But horrific. And if that wasn't enough... Because trust me, it's enough. But there's more. Chris said that Bella woke up and came into their room in the middle of this.
Oh.
Bella and Cece, 4 and 3, respectively, were notably light sleepers. Chris couldn't back up to the garage door without waking them up, which is why he always parked on the curb. But Bella walked in and asked what was wrong with Mommy.
Mm.
Chris said that she wasn't feeling well and then wrapped her body in a sheet on the bed.
The fitted sheet, presumably.
Yeah, whatever sheet was missing from that pile during the walkthrough, he wrapped her up in, and then he attempted to carry her down to his truck. Now, either he wasn't strong enough to fully do this, or one of her limbs fell down while he was carrying her and thudded on each single step as Bella watched from the top of the stairs. And if Cece didn't start there, she got there by the end of it. He then put Shanann's body in the back seat of his truck. Not in the trunk, but laid on the floor in the back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Bella and Cece, who were both now awake, watched this from the top of the stairs. And Chris, ever the thoughtful man, got both of them wrapped up in their favorite blankies and sat them in the back seat with their feet touching their dead mother.
And they're aware that Mommy's on the floor.
Correct.
Asking what's wrong with Mommy.
Yeah.
And he's saying she just doesn't feel well.
Yeah. And they're alive. And now listen, don't worry. Okay, I know you're stressed about this. He almost forgot his lunch, but he remembered to go back in and grab it.
Oh, I wasn't going to sleep tonight. Thank you.
Thank God he remembered his fucking packed lunch. So Chris says he left the house between 5:15 and 5:30 that morning.
Like normal time as he would to go to work.
Right.
Okay.
He had already had some conversations with some coworkers about a specific site that needed checking up on.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, he does like oil and petroleum sort of work.
Yeah, we won't pretend to know what goes into that, but
no,
he's got different sites he goes to.
Yes, he goes to different sites. I think this one either had a problem or a leak or an issue with one of the oil tanks or something, and that's why they needed someone to go out there.
Mm-hmm.
He texted coworkers that could have been going out there. He said, well, hey, I'm going to be out there anyway. Like, don't worry about showing up early. I got all that stuff.
Hey, don't come by. Don't worry. I'm handling it.
I got it. So he's the only one there.
Of course he is.
And he goes to the site, which, mind you, is an hour away.
So he has an hour of his babies asking what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I believe later he said like they were talking to each other and like soothing each other in the back seat. And he goes to this oil site at his work. And Chris first takes Shanann's body out of the car and puts it in a patch of grass nearby before taking Cece, his 3-year-old daughter, and strangling her with her own blankie. Once Cece was dead, he carried her to one of 2 standing crude oil tanks and forced her tiny body into one of them.
Meanwhile, his 4-year-old has watched her dad move her mother's body to grass. And then watched her little sister be taken from the car.
And killed.
Oh,
right in front of her face.
That's just so evil.
So then Chris comes back to the truck. And Bella, again, 4 years old, was gutted and afraid seeing what he did to her mom and her sister. She asked him if exactly what happened to Cece was going to happen to her.
Oh.
And Chris said, without a hint of emotion or care or empathy or any piece of his own heart for his own child, yes. He then strangled her with her blankie. And Bella fought. Her last words were, "Daddy, no." And then Chris pushed her into the tank of oil beside Cece. And Bella, being slightly older and slightly bigger, struggled to fit into the tank, So Chris shoved her in when she was later discovered. She was found with skin that was ripped from having been forced into the tank. And it still gets worse. After Bella and Cece were dead and thrown out like trash into crude, toxic, lethal oil mixtures, which, by the way, did require them to be buried in metal caskets for risk of explosion.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Chris turned to take care of Shanann, who was still wrapped in her bedsheet in the field. He decided to dig a very shallow grave. As he buried Shanann in the small grave, he could see that she had already miscarried Nico. So he buried them both in the small grave and wrapped up. He then covered it up with grass and gravel to try to make it look normal. And he called his boss and co-workers that were coming to the site at Anadarko and found out that other people were only about 40 minutes away. So he changed and he went back to work like fucking normal. Actually, nobody noticed anything different except for the pair of boots he was wearing. Chris acted normal and was actually kind of chipper later in the morning. And that's when he got the call from superstar Nicole Atkinson, Shanann's best friend, checking in on why she hadn't heard from her and why Shanann missed her 9 a.m. doctor's appointment, where we started in part one.
So by the time her friend has noticed, by the time anybody has noticed, it's all already done.
Yeah.
There's nothing that can, there's no preventing it, there's no saving it.
Nope. By that time, she had already been intimate with her husband for the first time in weeks, been told that they were getting a divorce, killed, miscarried her child, and both of her children were forced to watch and sit with that for an hour before being killed and put in toxic chemical mixtures themselves. And then he went back to work.
There's something about this that, as a human, not even a parent, God willing, I will be someday, that makes you think that he must have had some kind of break, that there had to have been something, because this is so cruel.
Yeah.
And it's not that he's like scheming and getting off on this, like where we would see in other cases where you can kind of see the depravity, but it's different.
Yeah.
This seems like yesterday it wasn't this way and today now it is. And so it almost credits to me the theory that something just snapped, because this is, at least right now with what I know at this moment, right. I don't know if there's evidence that there was a long history of planning or just those 5 weeks with his girlfriend and playing house felt a hell of a lot more fun than his real responsibilities that he had made up his mind. But this is just, you see videos of him and he's a seemingly doting dad.
Yeah.
Whatever their relationship was like between him and Shanann, appearances showed, I mean, his interactions, of which there are many.
Oh, yeah. Many, many documented.
That he doesn't look like this cold, calculated, shitty, you know, we were going through our Spotify Wrapped, and one of the episodes that you guys really seemed to like this year was John List.
Yep.
And I guess it's kind of ironic comparing them right now, given that it's a dad who killed his wife and his children. And we didn't have Facebook then, but nothing about when we talked about John List, did there ever seem to be a time where he was this excellent dad?
Yeah, there was warmth.
Yeah,
there.
Who showed up, it seemed very, and maybe such was the time,
right,
where he was the provider and that was his focus and there was nothing else. The wife did everything else, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
But to compare that case and this case where a dad has annihilated his family, there's just something different and something very haunting about this particular case, this family, how recent it was, how much we know about them, how much we've seen.
And it's devastating because you do, you see these videos. And this is one of the things that I think makes this case so heartbreaking to a lot of people is typically when you talk about this stuff, you are meeting a family, you're getting to know a family, but you're getting to know a family only in the lens of after mm-hmm. a horrendous event has happened. They had so much social media presence from Shanann's work that you know all of them before this. I mean, hell, I know Bella and Cece's voices. I can tell them apart and they're babies. That's how much we have.
You get to learn their little mannerisms and mm-hmm. their cute little footsteps and their little outfits and
yeah,
Shanann and their home and how she interacted with her husband and her kids. And it's just a very intimate part of somebody's life that they clue you into, I guess. And
then you get these little images of Chris doing their hair or putting skewers on their corn or being a dad and playing with them or just being a dad in general. And like,
and how does that dad do that thing?
Right.
How does that without there being something wrong? And so, I mean, I know we're going to get into all of that probably in the last part, but there's just something so jarring and terrifying. I think that's one of the reasons this case gets talked about. And again, we'll again talk about this in part four, but like, so many people feel like they're married to a Chris Watts in the good right. in the good days.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people supportive. Might.
He's great. He's great with the kids. He's loving. He's doting.
He's a provider. He's, you know, loving and happy and he's handsome and he loves his wife and mm-hmm. he's a girl dad, you yeah. know, and has all these things that you don't think that that does this.
Right.
You don't think that those are the same equation, that they could coexist in the same person. It's terrifying.
In fact, it feels by definition very mutually exclusive.
Like, yeah.
And so I do think that's part of it. And it's just, I don't even fucking know what to call it, that you can wake up one day and you will straight up tell your daughter to her face that she is going to die the way that you just killed her sister.
And she's not old enough to know that she's dead, but she's old enough to know something's very wrong.
Mm-hmm. And she's old enough to say, Daddy, no.
And she's afraid.
And she goes, fight back.
She says to the person who is supposed to protect her from everything,
stop.
And he is who she needed protection from.
Mm-hmm.
We're sorry that if you can hear the emotion.
Yeah.
We're going to
collect. I told you guys this one was.
We're collecting ourselves. Rough. But okay, so he's at work. People notice nothing's really out of the ordinary except that he seems a little chipper.
Yeah, he's wearing a different pair of boots, I think, than normal. But like, not even in a way where they're like, oh my God, he never does that. It was just like, I guess that was different.
And maybe to them, it would be endearing because it's like, hey, his wife just got home last night. Like, right. He's happy, like, you know, his wife's home. He missed her. She's gone like about a week.
Right.
You know, you might think that he's in a good mood because she's back.
Right.
Not a good mood because he's just annihilated his whole family.
Yeah. And that's where we started part one. So that's what he was doing when Nicole Atkinson was calling him and he was saying,
and he said,
I'm at work.
I'm on my way eventually. And then 2 hours later.
Yep. Yep. And so not long after his plea deal, again, that November 6th, where he decided to change it up and plead guilty mm-hmm. to all of these, was his sentencing hearing on November 19th of 2018. At the sentencing hearing, you hear various statements from both Shanann's family as well as Chris's family. I'm going to talk more about Chris's family in the last part, so I kind of skim over some of their part with this because they have more of a story with what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to very much make time to make sure that we got through anything I could find that her family said at this.
Okay.
Because they were able to make their victim witness impact statements, sort of address Chris before he goes to prison, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So Shanann's family did make some devastating statements about this, and they really show you how deeply this changed their life. Shanann's father, Frank Rusick, said, "You heartless monster. I trusted you to take care of them, not to kill them. They were loving and caring people. You have taken their bodies from me, but you will never take the love that they had for me. They loved us more than you will ever know, because you don't know what love is, or you wouldn't have killed them. You disgust me, and life will never be the same without Shanann. Shanann's mother, Sandra, said, "We loved you like a son. We trusted you. Your faithful wife trusted you. Your children adored you and also trusted you. Your daughter, Bella Marie, sang a song proudly. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but it was, 'Daddy, you're my hero.' I have no idea who gave you the right to take their lives, but I know God and his mighty angels were there at that moment to bring them home to paradise." She also said, "I want the world to know that our daughter and her children were so very loved by us." And now these, on their own, obviously are heart-wrenching. I don't even know how you articulate how you feel in that moment to the man that you endorsed in your family and is included as part of it, and then did something so brutal. And I don't know why this one really gets me, but the one from her brother, Frankie Rusick, really gets me. Because he spoke to Chris and he said, "Why? Why would you do this? You don't deserve to be called a man. What kind of person slaughters the people who love him the most? Did you really think you'd get away with this? Did you really think that this was your best option, to throw away your family like they were garbage? They deserve better, and you know that. I hope you spend the rest of your life staring at the ceiling every night, being haunted by what you've done." And he also told Chris that he never expected that someone he once called a brother would now be someone he spends his entire life trying to understand. And he is lucky to spend the rest of his life in prison, because Shanann's family were better than him. They didn't support the death penalty, and they didn't believe they had a right to take someone else's life, where Chris decided he had the right to take four.
Wow.
Chris's parents, Ronnie and Cindy Watts, also spoke at the sentencing. Initially, they had been given a court advocate who they thought would either be more supportive and helpful of their views, or maybe they hadn't realized some of the time they had to chat with her before could have been them giving her statements that they would like them to say. But it sounds like they were not a fan, because when they first walked in, she ended up saying to the court that Ronnie and Cindy accepted that Chris committed this horrendous crime. And again, they do report with disagreeing with this, and eventually, at least, I think Ronnie also made a statement, but certainly Cindy said that directly to Chris, and I think she only addressed Chris, "We have loved you from the beginning, and we still love you now."
Oh, that is just a situation I cannot imagine.
Nope.
I don't know what the right answer is. I just know, may that never find me. It is just...
Yeah. That's all you got. I mean...
That's it.
And that's the thing. Like I've said before, there have been parts of this that I don't always find myself thinking I would do the same things in their shoes in different scenarios here.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some that I did. Nutgate, I did feel like it was a little bit much. That being said, it was also a little bit much that it happened. But this is so hard, because what is right here? What is the right answer for them and their role in his life and their role in this case? And what isn't? And, you know, I'm glad I've never had to make that choice. And I'm glad that I don't understand it right now. But I sure don't.
I don't have words. I can't imagine being in the shoes of any of them.
Mm-hmm.
What you feel, how all-consuming that is, how overwhelming, and how on a national scale it was, too.
Yeah.
I think people forget just how big this case was.
Huge.
More probably in the Midwest and, like, Western U.S., but, I mean, I'm very aware of a lot of the details.
Yeah.
I love an Abby hyperfixation deep dive, so I'm learning a lot more. But his face was on like every trash magazine you could see at the supermarket. At least I remember that.
Oh, yeah. He also grayed like immediately, which, I mean, who wouldn't?
I hope it aged him.
I hope so.
that kind of evil, I don't think leaves you looking unmarked. Looking that way. I just, there's just something so sadistic,
yeah,
about someone who is capable of doing that and then to blame his wife for it
and let everybody else
believe that.
Yeah.
All right.
So Chris was ultimately sentenced to 3 life terms to be served consecutively, one after another, without the chance of parole, for pleading guilty to these murders. But as he also pled guilty to unlawful termination of a pregnancy and tampering with a deceased human body, they added more, which I love.
Mm.
So for the unlawful termination of Shanann's pregnancy with Nico, they added an additional 48 years to his sentence. And for 3 charges of tampering with a deceased body, they added an additional 36 years to his sentence.
All right. That sounded reasonable.
Yeah. And that makes his total count, if you were curious, a consecutive sentence of 3 life sentences and 82 years.
Yeah, we're...
So kind of 4.
We're kind of approaching where I would be comfortable with it. So yeah, that's... I'll accept it.
The judge told him that, and this is a quote, "This is perhaps the most inhumane and vicious crime I have seen in all of the cases that I have overseen, and nothing less than the maximum sentence would be close to appropriate."
Mm-hmm.
So afterwards, on the same day, 2 things happened. First, Shanann's family started a wrongful death civil suit against Chris Watts. And this is just a follow-up. This part wasn't the same day, but just so I don't lose it in the rest of the details. In a seemingly delightful bout of karma, the civil suit that the Rusicks started was closed, with a finding that ordered Chris to pay the family $6 million. The decision for this was based on $1 million for each death, plus $3 million for emotional distress. But my personal favorite part of this, if you were wondering, was that for every single year he was in repayment on the year, so annually, he had an 8% increase in interest for the rest of it. So he will never be done paying them back.
I mean, how is he going to pay for it?
Hey, he's doing important work as a janitor now. Which is something. It's not nothing.
Yeah, but
it's not going to give him $6 million.
That's what I mean. It's like that family is deserving of... I mean, money will never make a dent in that. But if they could pour that money into a foundation that allows their daughter and their grandchildren's legacy to live on and,
yeah,
you know, purpose it with something that can be good or do good in some way to have something come out of this.
Yeah.
They're still being robbed of that because they're not going to get anything... Anything, like...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that they found that decision. I think that was appropriate. It's the problem to me with a lot of restitution issues, because we can put it on paper that they deserve it, but then there is no... You can't
get blood from a stone.
Exactly. You can't get what isn't there. So
he gets ordered to pay this dollar amount on the same day as something else?
That civil suit started the same day that he went to prison.
Okay.
It was ended a little bit after, but there's so many details after this that I just don't want it to get lost in the mix.
Okay.
So also on November 19th, after the sentencing, obviously Chris does begin his prison sentence. He started his incarceration in Colorado, but he did have to be moved in December of 2018. So like a month and a half later, to Dodge Correctional Institution in Waupun, you guys tell us, Wisconsin.
Waupun. I made that up. I don't know.
We don't know. Guys tell us.
So in Wisconsin. Okay, interesting.
Go cheeseheads. So he seemed to be feeling, and this is that trigger warning for suicide, he seemed to be feeling very suicidal due to other inmates' threats of hurting him or telling him to kill himself.
There is a code in prisons.
And he is at the lowest rung of that totem pole.
A child killer and murdering your pregnant wife, that does not get you points.
No.
Actually, I think it gets you negative 18 points.
Personally. Each, I think.
I heard of that somewhere.
Yeah. And they're not nice to people with negative 18 points for each.
No.
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 And so he did have to be moved. He was in, essentially his being there was causing security threats and threats to him, mm-hmm. you know, which they can't have because they have to take care of their inmates. Also, again, due to this tension, they were like, we're gonna move you somewhere else where maybe you're not as known. Like, you'll still be known, but like, maybe you can go into the lunchroom.
Maybe.
I don't think he could do that. No. I think he's still primarily in isolation. But once Chris got to Wisconsin, he ended up turning it around, you know? Though I have seen reports of at least two conduct reports. Okay.
Mm.
So there was one that included unauthorized forms of communication and unauthorized transfer of property. And there was also one for disobeying orders and possession of miscellaneous contraband.
Okay.
So do with that as you will. Those are a little bit later, but they do happen. And Chris would tell you that he's a new man. He keeps photos of Shanann, Bella, and Cece in his cell. And he writes to them frequently.
I don't think he should be allowed any photos of his victims. Nope.
Well, you see, he often gives letters to his parents to read at their grave sites sometimes, including ones on their birthday. So they can go and read that to their grave.
Leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
You've done enough.
Further, in his favor, actually, despite a large petition with 20,000 signatures on it, officials in the prison said they weren't able to take these photos down because they had no legal basis for removing them. And I would like to add a quick, hey, why not? Why is it not a rule that you can't have photos of people you've murdered in your cell?
Other people would get off on that.
Some people would.
Maybe he does. I don't know. You
never know.
But I don't think that... I think his victims are deserving of more than their photos to be in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he deserves to be around any of that light. Personally.
Yeah. And some of the letters, and we'll talk more about this next time, just have like a very odd tone of like... writing to them as if what happened didn't happen.
Like, as if they're still alive?
I can't tell if it's, like, if they're still alive or if he's just, like, tapping out, like, he didn't make this awful thing happen. This awful thing just happened.
Kind I know. Of I hate when that happened.
So.
Like, come on.
Yeah. But, you know. But beyond that, his letter writing and his doting family that was doting to him till their very last seconds alive... Chris also reports being reborn into the Christian faith and has developed a very strong personal relationship with God, claiming he knows God forgives him for all that he's done, and he said it took this, and personal input here, I'm assuming by this he means the destruction and murder of his own family that he conducted, and then defiling their corpses in crude oil and shallow graves, but he's sad that it took this for him to find salvation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He is so dedicated to his new faith, and this is true, that he will read verses and scriptures to some of his friends in the prison.
See, what I believe
mm-hmm.
is that we all have our judgment day. And my God, do I not want to be Chris Watts. On that day, he can believe and tell himself whatever it is that he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what you believe. There is something that absolutely will happen, and I don't want to be him. I'm glad he's found a way to justify this in his mind, apparently.
Yep. And I will say
that spares him having to take accountability, that he can just write his letters to them as if it didn't happen, as if this were a freak thing that... like a freak accident that yeah. happened upon the family.
A natural disaster.
I mean, please.
I think it's hard because in many ways I don't ever want to deny someone the ability to grow. And in that sense, do better. Like just period, do better. But you don't get to use that as a justification to ignore and not take accountability and get a second chance at everything going great for you because of that. In fact,
yeah, I think those things can be simultaneous. I think you can grow, and I'm never going to discourage anybody from growing and getting better. Absolutely. And I don't really care. I think we should all be working on ourselves.
Yeah.
It is also true that what you did was evil.
Mm-hmm.
In that you are where you are supposed to be right now.
Yeah.
Do not use this for sympathy points or act as if this were just some, you know, freak thing that happened. It wasn't like he was driving a car.
No.
And the accident resulted in the loss of his family. He manually, with his own hands, murdered his pregnant wife, his 4-year-old and his 3-year-old daughter, and disposed of them like they were nothing.
Yep.
That's just a fact. I don't have all the answers. That's evil, though. That's it. That's all it is.
And you're right. But don't spend too much time being worried for him or sad for him.
I'm not.
Because
you,
Chris does, you know, he has a pretty successful life in prison. He spends his time exercising. He works as a custodian.
Don't like that.
He gets to, you know, participate in his faith and his scripture readings and writing letters. But, you know, the really nice thing about his life right now is, like, not only does he get to write letters to his family, but he also gets to spend time exchanging letters with multiple women. You know, because one source in 2022 said that Chris receives sexy photos from these women and doting responses from many who think that he is very handsome and very misunderstood.
That's just something that I've never understood, was the almost like groupie element that some people kind of attach themselves to these offenders. And as a true crime girly myself, who researches and is interested in understanding,
mm-hmm.
but I think the striving for understanding is out of a place of fear.
Yep.
You know, out of a place of, well, if I'm aware of what can happen, it can't hurt me kind of thing. Like that knowledge is power type thing that I think many of you listening would agree. I know that Abby and I are similarly aligned in that. But never have I been drawn to wanting a friendship or a romantic relationship or anything. Like there's something very different about that. And you might call me true crime obsessed.
Sure.
Right? I mean, look what
we have
do.
A podcast.
Look what we do in our free time. This is a big part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But never would I consider writing a love letter to Chris Watts or somebody else.
No, and I think that, you know, there's lots of reasons that people speculate that people are drawn to these offenders. And I have to be honest, it's very possible that men respond this way to women that are killers. I personally don't think there are a ton of examples where this is the case to call on mm-hmm. to say that. So I don't know for sure, but I can imagine it's not only one-sided. But I know that a lot of people sort of hypothesize that these are women that either want to be the exception, the one that can change them,
mm-hmm.
or have control, which if your partner is behind bars and cannot go anywhere, you got a lot of situational power in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's fascinating. I wish maybe one day I'll do like a CJ short or like a deep dive into the psychology of that, because I do think that's fascinating. But yeah, so he's got lots of pen pals.
He's still basking in the attention of women.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we'll probably get to her in the last part, but I got some things for Nikki.
Yeah,
man, I got some opinions.
And I think that, I guess this is also worth mentioning, he has not had contact with her since he was arrested.
I figured that, yeah.
I don't believe that was a lack of trying.
Mm.
But the trying did sizzle out at some point.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think the incarceration of it all, too, might limit his ability to call her.
Yes.
Potentially.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
I know that at least she was able to say that she did not want to talk.
Yeah, that's good.
So whether that was her and rules and regulations where he is or just her, mm-hmm. I'm happy to report at least that much. But while I do wish I could say that this was the end of our story, dear listener, I cannot. We still have many updates for next week, including where we've been since his incarceration. It's 6 years. Mm-hmm. He's given significantly more interviews, exchanged letters with people, giving more information away that I think you need to know, frankly. Mm-hmm. We are also going to get into that psychology that we talked about and the true aftermath for the Rusick family, as well as Chris's family. But also really get into that interview because I think you guys will find it interesting how he still finds ways to blame women for his actions. I think it will be important closure for us to get a good sit down and chat about all of this and how something this horrendous really impacts families, friends, community, and the offender themselves. Or doesn't. I don't know. But due to the horrific nature of today's episode and the graphic and incredibly disturbing things that this man did, I don't feel right adding on more hurt and harm to family and friends today. And I don't know about you, but I certainly wouldn't feel like I could do that any justice in the equally important details that they have after all of this. I feel like that does an injustice to Shanann, Bella, Cece, and Nico, and also all of their family members that have survived this tragedy. So instead, I wanted us to just take a moment to reflect at the end of this. I'm going to put in some of those audio clips of Bella and Cece, some with Shanann, just so you guys have something to hold on to a little bit.
These are real people.
They're very real people. And fully, before we get there and before we finish, I also just wanted to add in some resources for grief. You can find them in our show notes. And as always, we do advocate for you to research on your local level to get your best community options. But seemingly good-grief.org is a great place to start. And also for those in the States, SAMHSA.org is also here. And it has some really great information on coping with bereavement and grief. We mean it when we say that the ATFTC fam wouldn't be the same without you. Use those supports. Lean on your people when it's hard. And know that we always prefer you as happy and as healthy as you can be. But regardless of where you are, there is a seat for you at our table. This case isn't unique in the grief and ache that learning about these things can give you. But it is unique in the way that we get to know this family before and after. This family just feels very reachable and knowable in a way that we don't get to experience with other cases. And it may be more likely in the future with all of this social media and now it being everywhere and everyone having an account on everything. But certainly this was one of the first of its kinds to really feel so personal to people who didn't know them personally. So without further ado, here's a little time to pause, reflect, and connect with the souls that we lost.
Hey guys! Say hi, Cece. Say hi, Bells.
Hi, Bells.
No, you gotta say hi.
Hi.
We can't forget Dieter. Here comes Dieter. Say hi, Dee Dee.
Hi, Dee Dee.
Okay, come here. Say bye, Cece.
Oh.
Oh. Will they have kisses?
No. Thank you. What is?
All right, guys. I wanted to just say hi. Let Bella say hi. Oh, and Cece's trying to get the phone.
Here we go, Steelers. Here we go. Ooh, ooh.
I just want to say hi to Cece. Also, her hair is Cece. Can you sit with us?
Thank you.
It is with us. It's with Cece and Beth. It's Cece.
Okay.
I will stay with her. Don't take her away.
I'm not taking her away.
Aria.
Almost 7 o'clock at night, she's still going.
Daddy is a hero. He helps me grow up strong. He helped me not go to. He reads me books. He ties my shoes. If you're a hero, blue and blue, my daddy.
All right. Thank you guys so much for hanging in there with us, and we will see you next week. But in the meantime, if you wanted to see the beautiful people and the places and the things that we talked about today or in any of our other episodes, or if you, like me, desperately need a reprieve after today, you can find some very funny cat memes on our page.
Why is it always cats? We're just cat people. It's in our logo. It's in, we have a cat. Like, always walking over our computers as we're sitting here.
Yeah.
So.
We love the pod pets. We love.
Yeah. Reprieves often include animals. I'm sorry. We just love them.
Silly goofies, memes.
Something to make you smile. Something to make you laugh. Something to make you want to boop a pod pet. We've got it all. So you can definitely spend some time on our Instagram if you have time to spend.
Yes. You can. Oh, you can kill a couple hours there. You could find that in our link tree. Also in our link tree, you could find our email if you wanted to send us a message or you don't have social media to interact and you want to. You could also find our Venmo and our PayPal if you wanted to donate fiscally to the pod, and Redbubble if you wanted to see some merch. Although, if I'm being honest, I feel like they're doing some wonky things. So stay tuned because I'll be updating that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you have plenty to do. I have a couple more tissues to use. And if I do check my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Have a hearty, jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there is no, but I have a cup of beer.
Ho, ho, the mistletoe.
My girl can see somebody that's royal.
Kiss her.
Won't storm me. Have a hearty, jolly Christmas.